Thank you for holding, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Cooperative Reporting Conference Call. At this time, all lines are in a listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions, and instructions will be given at that time. I thank you for your attention, and I now turn the time over to your host, Denise Faulkner. Please go ahead.
And good morning, everyone. We want to thank you for joining us and welcome you on this, our seventh conference call as part of our statewide collaborative here at IBRO. Today's call is entitled Collaborative Reporting, and we will be discussing the role of measurement data, tracking measurement data, and team forming in quality improvement projects as well as the during the course of the collaborative. And our featured speaker this morning is Dr. Charles Stimler, and he is one of our medical directors here at IBRO. But before we introduce Dr. Stimler, we just want to remind everyone to log on to jenny.ibro.org so that you can follow with us through the presentation materials that have been posted there. And again, that's Jenny, J-E-N-Y, no www, dot IPRO, I-P-R-O, dot org. So if you'd like to take a few moments, if you have not already done so, and log on, that would be great. And also to remind you that we've also posted the evaluation form for this call, and we ask that at the end of the call, you take a few moments to complete it and get it back to us as soon as possible. Okay, as we stated, we're going to be discussing collaborative reporting, and it's an important concept as we begin, as we prepare to go into the next phase of the collaborative, which is the action period phase, where you begin to implement your various test changes and track and monitor your data to assess the success of those system changes. And at this time, I'm going to introduce our speaker, Dr. Stimler, who I said before is one of our medical directors here in the Quality Improvement Division at IBRO. And Dr. Stimler works on the developing and implementing of healthcare quality improvement projects by selecting and developing project concepts, designing project methodology, including the analysis plan and data collection instrument, and participating in the final data analysis, interpretation, and report generation. He also coordinates the activity of coding experts, data analysts, physicians, and nurse clinician study group members, and various other personnel. He is board certified in internal medicine, hematology, and oncology. And at this time, I introduce to you Dr. Charles Stimler.
Well, good morning, everyone. And it's a pleasure to be here this morning to talk to you about measurement and tracking in the context of the senior leader report. And what I would suggest you do during my talk is to sort of keep two different documents handy. One is the template of the senior leader monthly report that I believe is up as a Word document on the Jenny site. The other is the slideshow that I will be going through step by step to sort of communicate the issues that we're going to be talking about today. But the way I've designed the slideshow is that it should be more or less parallel to the topics, the Roman numerals that are highlighted for the Senior Leader Monthly Report, so that as we go through the slides, we'll also be going through the Senior Leader Monthly Report and covering sort of the ins and the outs of what each of those categories represents and why they're so important. And throughout this whole process, I'm hoping also that you'll get a sense of the reasons why we want you to do a Senior Leader Monthly Report, the many fold reasons, one being that I think it's a great way to organize your thinking, organize your strategy, but in addition, it's a great communication tool, both within your team, so that, you know, the members of the team can work together on putting together the answers or the components of the Senior Leader Monthly Report. You know, everyone's sort of on the same page with things. But also, because it's important in terms of sharing between your hospital and other hospitals, so that this is going to become sort of the standardized way in which people who are curious about what you're doing in your hospital are going to be able to get a sense of what problems you're facing, what quality indicators you're trying to work on, what setbacks you've had, and how you've overcome some of them. So this is really the way in which this channel of communication is going to take place. So I have here on the slideshow an outline of the presentation, and the theme really is how you're going to be communicating and measuring your progress, and particularly in this case, progress has a very quantitative spin to it. So we're really talking about data, how you're going to communicate a lot of the, you know, the fluctuations in terms of your progress as measured by your performance on the quality indicator measurements. And as we mentioned, this will be done through senior leader reports. And an important component of these reports will be the run charts. And we're going to talk a little bit more specifically about run charts later on during the presentation. Well, ultimately, what are our goals for everything that we're doing here in Jenny? And the ultimate goal really is to help the patient, and to do that by improving both the process of care by which we're treating our patients as well as the actual outcomes, which is the health of our patients. So some examples of goals that we might have would be, let's say we want 100% of our patients who are receiving hip replacement to receive the first dose of their prophylactic antibiotic within an hour of incision time. And for those of you who are working on the SIP, or the Surgical Infection Prevention Project, you know what I'm talking about. This is an important one of the three measurements for that. Another goal might be that you want 100% of your patients who have a history of smoking to be receiving counseling and to also receive assistance for smoking cessation. And as you probably know, the smoking cessation measurement or indicator is present on the community-acquired pneumonia topic, as well as the two cardiac topics, chronic heart failure and AMI. And finally, you might want that 100% of patients who are age 65 or older and who are eligible should be both screened for pneumococcal vaccine status and receive the pneumococcal vaccine prior to discharge, which means unless they've already been immunized, have a contraindication, or have refused. So we have these important primary goals, which really are patient care goals, but there are a lot of secondary goals that I think are just as important and perhaps in the long run might even be more important. Because what we really want you to help you to do through this process of Jenny is to build a capacity within your hospital to be able to continue to do quality improvement projects that you might think are relevant for your population even long after this Jenny Collaborative is finished with. And, you know, we call that organizational change. And some of the ways that we're hoping to help you out are by teaching, and hopefully from us, iPro Collaborative staff, you will learn some strategies and techniques for doing this. We also hope that you will learn from other collaborating hospitals by sharing your experiences as well as reading and learning about theirs, and possibly mentoring as well, which is a strategy by which the more experienced or those centers that have already sort of achieved goals might specifically kind of take under the wing other hospitals that could benefit from that expertise. We expect and hope that you will be attending conference calls which focus on various elements of these interventions and help you out, and we're available on a one-to-one basis to do this for barriers to help you do problem solving to improve your care. Now, we started Jenny in late August, early September, and we're calling it JENY, which is the Joint Effort New York Collaborative, and we have a mission statement of sorts, which is that the mission of this collaborative is to achieve within 12 months, to be ending this coming July, a substantial increase in the quality indicators for either community-acquired pneumonia and or chronic heart failure and or acute myocardial infarction and or surgical infection prevention. Now that's quite a mouthful, and it, in the mission statement here we've got four topics going on because that's really the breadth of what CMS has sort of delineated as being, you know, the areas for improvement, but we don't expect any one hospital to be doing more than, I hope, just one or two areas? Because my guess is that by and large, for most of your hospitals, you have pretty much the same group of people who will be working on the different topic areas. So I think working on more than one or two at the same time may be a bit too much. And we follow improvements and hope that they occur both on an individual hospital basis, which means that each of your hospitals will improve, as well as an aggregate basis across all participating institutions, meaning that we hope the state as a whole improves in terms of performance. Now, coming back to sort of the step-by-step walk through the Senior Leader Monthly Report, these are the Roman numerals and the different topics for the report. We have the AIM statement. We have the team members and roles responsibilities, description of team meetings, description of population of focus, the annotated run charts, which include the quality indicator measurements, number of cases at each measurement, the tested change ideas. I'll go into that more depth a little bit later. The learning table, which is complementary to the run chart in that it gives a little bit, whereas the run chart's very quantitative and it's a graph with a little bit of written annotation on it, the learning table is entirely a description of what you did during that month. And finally, an interesting last category of experiences and stories, which we think are very important. So to start with the AIM statement, how do you write an AIM statement? What's really, why is this important and how do you do it? Each team will have to come up with an AIM statement. Now this will probably stay the same or change only slightly throughout your collaborative so that once you've written it, you've pretty much done all the work you need to do on this part for most of the year. You might decide to change it if your goals alter slightly. But an AIM statement is a written, measurable statement of the accomplishments that a team expects to make from its improvement effort. It has to contain a general description of the work, the pilot population, and the numerical goals. So that one example we have here is that Hospital A will achieve within 12 months, so we have the time interval specified, a 95% rate, so we now have the goal, the target rate specified, of both smoker identification and cessation counseling. So we've mentioned here the quality measurements that we are addressing. Among all patients admitted to the medical service, with a diagnosis of community-acquired pneumonia, and in that final phrase, we have defined our target population. Okay, so the AIM statement breaks down into those pieces, and all those pieces are necessary in order for it to be complete. So moving down the Senior Leader Monthly Report, we now move on to the list of members of your team and their roles and responsibilities. You must have a quality improvement team. Every hospital has to develop this team. And we strongly suggest that at least four members of the team should follow this sort of categories of members, so that there should be a senior leader who has an organization-wide scope, a system leader with a system-wide scope, a clinical champion, and a day-to-day leader. You may add other team members, but we think that these are the essential ones, and it's really not just only that we think it. This has been a process that has been tested by the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. Gathering this type of a team together and having them work on improvement is something that has been shown to work in numerous types of settings. Probably the most work has been done in the hospital setting. Across numerous different types of hospitals, be they community hospitals, academic centers, other types of institutions, and there have been many successes using this strategy. So to go into depth regarding each member, the senior leader is the one that has the ultimate authority to allocate time and resources at the highest levels. This is often someone who is very high profile within the hospital, someone who definitely has the ability to leverage both the visible support, as in public relations, as well as the actual ground troop level sort of multidisciplinary support that you need on the wards. Needs to be a champion of change. And this is where it's really best if you sort of reach for the stars. The higher level you can get sort of to agree to be on your team at the very beginning, the more momentum you'll be able to build and the more success you'll have. So some examples of really excellent people to have as senior leaders would be CEOs, executive vice presidents, or senior directors. And I can't emphasize enough that most writings on quality and studies on quality point to the fact that quality really begins from the top. And it is very difficult if you don't have buy-in from your very, very high-level administrative leaders within your hospital or institution. So do whatever you can to try to get them on board. Having said that, it's also important not to impose too much of a responsibility on these folks. Your CEO, I think, clearly is not going to be attending every one of your team meetings. That's just not really the role of the CEO, and I don't think it's a realistic expectation. So your senior leader needs to be someone who's sort of there for crisis, there sort of, you know, putting their name on board, their visibility on board. Perhaps you just need to keep them apprised every couple of months in terms of what's happening with your project. So don't feel like, oh, gee, you know, it's really going to be hard to get the CEO on board because, you know, we can't get him to come to every single meeting. Of course you can't, you know. But to have his name on board so that he's aware of what you're trying to do is really the goal here. Now, the system leader is someone who has more of a direct authority to allocate time and resources in the individual system where the quality improvement project takes place. So that, you know, if this is in the medical service, it might be a medical director, for example. This person probably reports in some capacity to the one that you chose as the senior leader. And your system leader is going to be closer to the day-to-day functioning level and may therefore oversee many of the clinicians or the administrative staff that actually will be affected by the quality improvement process and project. So, you know, we mentioned director of medical service, VP for operations, et cetera. These are folks that are important to have on board. Now, the next critical member is your clinical champion. And this is the person that is your bridge between your theory and your practice. Okay, this is the person is usually a physician, but in some institutions it could even be a pharmacist or a nurse practitioner or someone who is well-known, well-respected for their knowledge and for their opinion and is sort of a natural leader. And on top of that, strongly supports the project that you're doing, is basically a strong advocate of the process. So they have the respect of their peers, and they are an effective promoter of positive change. I said it's usually physicians, and depending on the topic, it could be a surgeon, anesthesiologist, cardiologist, pulmonologist, or internist. Every now and then, we have a pharmacist or a nurse practitioner, so it really depends on the person, but it's someone who everyone really will tend to follow their opinion on. And I would guess that the next category, the day-to-day leader, probably represents most of the folks who are listening on the phone today. These are the people who really do a lot of the grunt work, the driving force behind the project to maintain the momentum and the focus, the one that coordinates communication between the team, kind of keeps everybody in line, keeps everybody up to date with what's happening, interacts between iPro collaborative members and the team, oversees the data collection, doesn't necessarily do it all themselves, but sometimes does, is very easy to, you know, work in terms of working effectively with all the other members of the team. It's often a nurse, a registered nurse. It can be a pharmacist, discharge planner, or really almost anyone who is involved in the clinical care of patients. The characteristics of team members is that they need to be leaders who are also team players, possess relevant skills and proficiencies, must have problem-solving abilities and interests, because there are going to be problems that are going to pop up that need to be overcome. Creativity, motivation, enthusiasm are essential, and resilience may be the most important quality, the ability to endure and persevere despite early setbacks. And generally, there are early setbacks, but as time goes on, the tide tends to turn, and the projects are generally have been very successful. Moving down now to Roman numeral number 3, team meetings. We suggest that you do weekly meetings. You could do monthly meetings, but I think that that wouldn't be enough to keep the momentum going. And anything more frequent than weekly meetings probably will not be feasible in terms of the time that it takes. Not all members of the team need to be present at each meeting, but clearly the day-to-day leader needs to be there. All members should have input to the learning table, which we'll talk later, in fact, on the next slide about, which covers the plan, do, study, and act cycle for each of the 4 consecutive weeks. And let me tell you just, I'm sure most of you are familiar with the PDSA cycle, but plan is basically the objective for the cycle, questions about and a plan is what you're going to carry out, what you're going to try to do. Do is actually how you went out about to carry out the plan. In that, you also document problems and unexpected observations. And then in study, this is where you do your data piece. You actually measure whether or not your plan met reality. You planned maybe to have an increase in smoking cessation counseling rates, and then you did something, and the study portion really asked the question, well, now we'll look at the data, did we actually improve the rates or not? And then the act is, well, did we or didn't we, and if we didn't, what changes are to be made in the next cycle? What do we need to do in order to improve things? So we go down to the learning table, and that is Roman numeral number should be number 6. It's at the top of the second page. For each week or for each cycle, you're going to have a horizontal column across across the table. So you're going to have something that you're going to say in your plan, something that you're saying in your do, something in your study, and something in your act. And one example of what you might do is, let's say that you were focusing on smoking cessation. And the plan would be, in this case, to educate medical floor nurses about community resources for smoking cessation. You could write that as your plan. That's what you're trying to do. Do, well, you went ahead and you performed 2 separate presentations for 2 different shifts of staff nurses, and they were presented by the clinical champion. So you're a physician who is a strong anti-smoking advocate went ahead and gave some nurse education, and that's what you write in your do column. Study, this is where you've actually collected some data and taken a look at it. Your quality indicator rates now rose from 15% to 26%. And that's part of your study because that's the data piece. But then in addition to that, you have an interpretation for that data. So in other words, you now compare it back to your plan. Well, your plan was probably to do better than that. So you had anticipated a much higher increase. So what you do as part of your study is you delve into it. You try to figure out, well, why didn't we get the increase that we thought we were going to have? And then upon further study and discussion with nurses, you then realize that there was some confusion regarding when to give that education. That although a lot of the elements of education had been discussed, the exact issue of at what point during the hospitalization should that education be presented to the patient was never really covered, and everybody thought the other nurse was doing it. So, you know, there was that kind of confusion. So you realize that now, and you can now act on it. So in your act portion, in the act column, you state that we will now include a recommended schedule for initiation and when to give this intervention in all future presentations. So that's sort of what you go through in a thinking process when you do your PDSA cycle and you document that cycle in your learning table. Now, the last category here is stories. And, you know, stories have kind of a real important, stories turn out to be a really important way to teach. A lot of us really relate to specific examples in sort of almost human interest-like stories, and they can sort of consolidate a concept and deliver a message sometimes a lot more powerfully than just the abstract, you know, medicalese of, pharmacology or process, et cetera. So, you know, sharing stories in your senior leader report is good practice if you've got an interesting anecdote to relate to other hospitals. But even within your own hospital, try to always create a certain positive buzz. Try to figure out ways that you can, you know, sort of instill positive gossip about what you're doing. You know, talk about the good accomplishments that the project has had, and make it part of your day-to-day gossip and your day-to-day chit-chat of what's going on. And to sort of complement that, try to keep your senior leader reports and your run charts at a very high profile level within your hospital, sort of back up your story so that, you know, don't keep your run charts in a bound loose leaf book on a shelf somewhere, but post them up on a wall, post them up on a bulletin board. If you want, even make multiple copies of them and post them up on, you know, those bulletin boards throughout the hospital where people check for other things like, you know, jobs or announcements from administration. Give a very high profile to what you're doing. It doesn't cost very much more to do that. You're putting already so much effort into this work. Be proud of it, and use these extra few channels to try to augment the effect of what you're doing. Well, now I'm going to talk to the more specific issues of data collection and display, which are run charts. And contrary to the name, a run chart is not something you need to run away from, although I think the first time someone sees a run chart, maybe that's what they were thinking of doing. But a run chart is basically a graph, and it's one of the templates that was the Excel file that you all downloaded. So what I'd ask you to do now is to take that out and look at it. And we're going to get to run charts in a couple of slides, but everything I'm going to be talking about now is relevant to the measurement piece and the run chart. So I want to talk a little bit about rapid cycle methodology, because that is the driving methodology behind the run chart. And the principle here is we want to improve things quickly. And to do that, you have to start with small changes and a small target population. So you can't expect to change the world overnight, but you might be able to sort of change your own little neighborhood. So it's almost like, you know, think local and eventually grow to becoming global across your hospital. So what we ask you to do in this sort of strategy is to field test changes that you think are plausible. In other words, when it comes to your plan part of your PDSA, come up with ideas that you think will probably work, or at least, you know, might work, or you think, you know, have a good shot at working, and field test them one at a time on a small predefined population and measure the results to see if they actually work. Closely track these results on your run charts so that you can see, for example, in the template that you've got, this run chart was tracked through January, February, March, April, May, and this is a little bit better than you'll probably get, which is that every single month things are getting better, but this is an example of how you can see visually that things are actually improving. And the general hope here is that once you find something that works within your small community that you've defined, you can then generalize it, and it's got a good chance of working in a larger space. It's almost like a franchise. You know, you start with your idea, and you test it out until you perfected it, and once it works, you then spread it out. Well, I kind of glossed over the issue of data collection here because I think that's probably where there's a lot of anxiety in terms of, you know, is this going to be difficult to do? How do I do it? How do I define a sample? We'll talk a little bit about some of these things now. Well, we do it because we want to know if the intervention worked or not. And the suggested frequency is to collect data every week or every 2 weeks, and to always take a look at that data during each and every team meeting and definitely report those data on the senior leader reports. Well, one of the things that you should do to practice collecting data, even before you start doing this collaborative, is to get a baseline. In other words, even before you're ready to get up and running with your first team meeting, try to do some data collection to establish a baseline. Where are you starting out from? Without even doing anything, what's your sort of zero time rate of quality indicator performance? For example, what proportion of your inpatient population smokes? How many of these are getting cessation advice? Or if you're doing the CAP project, what proportion of eligible inpatients are getting the pneumococcal immunization? Or if you're doing SIP, what proportion of hip replacement patients are receiving that first dose of prophylactic antibiotic within 1 hour of incision time? So you need a sampling strategy to proceed. And the first thing is really to make things as simple as possible. Pick a population to study. A small population. Okay, so don't just say, well, I'm going to, you know, do the hospital. We're going to do, XYZ hospital. We're going to go on every ward. We're going to do every doctor. We're going to do every surgical procedure. No, don't do that. Narrow it. Pick just one type of service, maybe just a medical ward even. Not just all of the medical patients, but just maybe just a wing on the medical ward. Make it as easy for yourself as possible. Maybe even narrower than that. Let's say all patients admitted to 3E, let's say that's the wing, who are patients of Dr. Smith or Dr. Jones. So now we're even going to narrow it further. Okay, so you want to try to keep it easy to manage, easy to track, easy to follow. And you could even pick Dr. Smith if Dr. Smith is your clinical champion. It may make a lot of sense to try to make things as easy as possible. And if Dr. Smith is on the wards that month and he's a clinical champion and he's already bought on board of the project and is supporting it, then he'll probably be thrilled that you are interested in measuring his patients. Or maybe not thrilled, because maybe none of us are totally thrilled, but he'll go along with it. He'll say, yep, you know, I strongly believe this is important, and yes, I'd be happy to have you look at my patients for smoking cessation, let's say. Now, you may want to collect data on every patient that Dr. Jones or Dr. Smith admits to the ward. If there's a lot of patients that they admit, if it's more than 30 a month, then you might want to do sampling within that group. It may be too many to sample every single one. So you have to decide, really it's your call, whether or not you're going to do a total sample, meaning every patient, you know, on that ward with that doctor with the condition that you're looking at, or if you want to do a sample within that group. And choose a day each week for data measurement, and decide ahead of time exactly how many charts you're going to try to review. Now, I want to point out that a lot of the issues that come up with data collection are that we don't have time to do it. And what I want to suggest is that you do have time, because it is possible to do it with only one chart a day. If you review just a single chart a day, which should only take about 5-10 minutes at the most, then after 5 days, after one work week, you have 5 charts. And after 4 work weeks, you have 20 charts. And that's not a bad number for a denominator for a month. So, you know, you can break it down to a routine where you're only putting maybe 5 or 10 minutes a day into it. So data collection is manageable. And how do you choose which samples to use? Well, once you've defined your population, use a convenient sample. We really don't want you to have to do randomization or any kind of fancy techniques. Just pull the chart that's closest to you on that day. That's fine. We don't recommend that you do any formal training to do this abstraction. I mean, generally, it will be the day-to-day leader. It will be someone who's clinical, someone who's pretty reliable in terms of their ability to get the information from the chart. There isn't any reliability or validity checking. And what are you going to look for in each chart? A quick yes or no answer. That's basically it. If the patient smokes, did that patient receive advice for smoking cessation? Let's say that's what you're looking at. Well, either they did or they didn't. And you, as the nurse on the wards, you know where that advice generally goes. You know, either it's in a progress note, or maybe it's in an education note in a different section of the chart. Well, you know which sections to look at, and you go ahead, you check those sections, and if you see it, it's a yes. If you don't see it, it's a no. Very, very simple process. Did the patient receive the appropriate screening for pneumococcal vaccine? And if indicated, did they receive the vaccine? How do you tell? Look in the progress notes. Was there, you know, a discussion with the patient? Look in the orders, the physician orders, or the nursing medication records. Was a pneumococcal vaccine administered or not? Yes or no? Did the surgical patient receive the first dose of prophylactic antibiotic within 1 hour of incision? Look at the time. If the time is there on the order for the antibiotic, then look at the time in the anesthesiologist's record for the incision. And was that within an hour or no? Yes or no? This is a whole lot simpler than the kinds of abstractions that you're doing for your hospital JCO and CMS core measurements, where you know you're going through this long abstraction tool, and you know you're answering a lot of different questions, and then the program calculates out the yes or no. In this case, you're just coming up to the conclusion yes or no by yourself. So data collection example would be that for patient selection, you're deciding to review all pneumonia patients admitted to doctors A, B, and C, who are three different family practitioners, after they're admitted to the floor. The date to review data will be every Thursday p.m., and the number of cases to review will be all available cases, because you know from your past experience that there won't be that many, and it's, you know, you need to have them all. And you're going to look at the quality indicators for smoking cessation, pneumococcal immunization, and timeliness of antibiotics. And let's say this next slide now represents the actual number of cases that you were able to review. So that in week number one, you did 18, then 20, then 12, and 16. So that for a month, you did 66 cases, which is really good. And for, you know, for many of you, you might be able to reach that. For some of you, like I said, you may only get 20 or 25. That's okay. You can work with whatever denominator you get. So these are the denominators. So moving on then, from the 66 cases reviewed, we find that 58 out of 66, or 88%, were asked about their smoking history. Okay? So if you're trying to look at who got cessation advice, you certainly aren't you going to use all the patients as the denominator, because the first question is, you got to have asked about the smoking history. And that's, you know, that's your first indicator here. So 88% were asked. Now, of those 58 patients who were asked, only 39 actually were smokers, either currently or recently. So 67% were smokers, but how many then were eligible to get cessation advice? Only the 39 that were smokers. So that becomes your new denominator. Because clearly you're not going to give, or you don't need to give, cessation advice to people who never smoked. So when you're calculating out, you know, the percentage who received cessation advice, you now use that 39 as your denominator. And now let's say we know that 6 out of those 39, or 15%, received cessation advice. Similarly, 2 out of 56, or 4% patients, 4% of patients were screened and have received the pneumococcal vaccine when indicated. And 20 out of 58, or 34%, of patients received their first dose of antibiotic within 4 hours. Now you'll notice that the denominators aren't always 66, because I haven't walked you through it, but for every indicator, you might choose certain exclusions. There might be some reasons why you don't want you know, patients to be included in the denominator. So that's sort of up to you. And now that we have these numbers, and we have these percentages, we can now create run charts. So run charts are used to display data. And what you want to do is make a separate run chart for each quality indicator. And they are very simple graphs with time on the x-axis and performance on the y-axis. So as you go from left to right, you're going from past to future. Each month's result is plotted as a single point, and the points are connected with lines just to make it easier to view. The next slide shows you, let's say, and probably, you know, could have put January 2005, but here we're using January 2004. Let's say that was the first month of your measurement, and your denominator was 39 patients, and we're using the exact example, in fact, that we just walked through. and 15% received cessation advice. Now, notice the way this run chart is structured. There's a lot of information in this run chart. Run charts are meant to be illuminating. They're supposed to sort of give you at a glance a total gestalt of what's happening in the in your project. So that the title across the top of the run chart, pneumonia patients admitted to medical service, that is actually your sample description. So you could actually write in that, you know, all pneumonia patients admitted to 3E on Dr. Smith or Dr. Jones service. You could put that all as a title. That's defining your denominator. Now the x-axis along the side on the left, percentage receiving cessation advice. That is your quality indicator or performance measurement definition. So like we said, each run chart corresponds to one performance measurement. Here, it's very clear what the performance measurement is. It's cessation advice. Your sample time period is on the x-axis, and your data point is the point you just did. Now, as the months roll on, and you know, you go from January, February, March, April, and May, you will have additional measurements to add to the run chart. And here you could see a run chart that has developed over time. Again, a very nice looking one. Yours may have a couple more sort of roller coaster ups and downs a bit before it gets high, but it will get there. And you can see that the points are connected by lines. And another thing you'll see is a dotted line. If you look really closely, between the 80% and the 100% horizontal line, there's a dotted line, which is the goal. So that although we didn't show it on the earlier one, you have to sort of set up a goal. In other words, some kind of finish line. Where do you want to be ultimately at the end of the collaborative? And when this group started out in January 2004, they thought, well, gee, to get to 90% would really be terrific. So let's make that our goal. And you represent that as a dotted line on the graph. You could see that when they hit April, and they were already at 74%, they became more ambitious. And they felt that their goal could actually be bumped up a bit to 95%. So that's why there's a discontinuity, and all of a sudden the dotted line takes off from April to May being at 95%. And in fact, they did achieve that in May. Like I said, this is a idealized version of a run chart. Now, that's not the complete run chart, though, because there's more information that you can fit on a run chart that will be very helpful, I think, to you as you look back on your project and try to figure out what were the highlights of what worked and what didn't work. And what I have represented in this slide is pretty much the same thing as you've got represented on your Excel template. So if it's easier for you to look at the Excel template because it's a little larger, please feel free to look at it there. You've got all the same things, of course, actually, for some reason now the goal has shifted to 100%, so that's sort of in hindsight, so that doesn't happen. But the other things that have been added are these little boxes with comments in them and arrows that are pointing from the comments to the solid lines connecting the data point dots. Well, what are these? Basically, these are highlights of the interventions that took place in the transition from one data point to another. These are sort of your plan, do, study, act highlights, and you can see that from 15 to 26% what was done here, and in fact all of these are do's, okay, so these are all things that would have occurred within the do part of the PDSA cycle. Education was provided for the floor nurses. Well, we know that. We went through this earlier. Then, from February to March, the do part of this was that a standardized form was created for documentation of cessation advice. That was felt to actually help get it on the chart so that it would be more easy to find. After that, the clinical pathway was modified to include the cessation advice, and that helped time the delivery of the advice, so it was always given at the same time and people knew what process it was part of. And then staff education, a dedicated staff educator was assigned to cessation. It was such a successful project, it was felt that we needed to actually hire a person to do this on a day-to-day basis, and that kind of boosted things up from 74 to 95%. So these give you at a glance everything that happened in this project and what seemed to be more successful and what wasn't successful. And you see also that there was a Grand Rounds presentation on smoking cessation on April 3rd. This is sort of underneath the, above the April part of the x-axis, and it's just represented by a vertical arrow. So it just sort of happened in one moment in time, and that's why it's just sort of put there. But also, you see sort of a one-way arrow that's hugging the x-axis, discussions with physician staff regarding policy changes, because this is something that started in March and then continued. It wasn't just a one-shot thing. It wasn't something that, you know, was just started and it was just a do. But ongoing discussions continued to happen. So you can represent that, if you wish, as a one-way arrow. So to just wrap up, and I have a few other slides, but they really, I'm just going to sort of, you know, gloss over most of them because they're mostly summaries. I want you to be sure, and the point of the next slide really is that all senior leader reports should contain run charts, because I've given you, and this methodology really gives you a lot of leeway in terms of how you do your data collection. The purpose here is to really make it as easy as possible, okay, to put as few obstacles in the way of being able to do that data collection, so we don't want you to forget to do it. We're making it easy so that you do it and that you record it on run charts, because we do want this to be, to some extent, a data-driven project, and also to be up to date. Because one of the weaknesses that, as you know, iPro data collection or CMS data collection has is that it takes a long time for us to get this data done. If we do a statewide measurement, we have to really get the billing data in, do randomization, send medical record requests out for the charts, then they come in, then we train abstractors, then we do abstraction. By the time you get the data from either CMS or iPro, it could be 9 months or a year or more later. Well, that's not going to help you in a rapid cycle improvement. So the reason it's so easy to do is that you got to do it fast, and get it up on your senior leader report so that you know how you did last week. So you could decide, did it work or not, and am I going to continue this or am I going to change it this week? So run charts really do represent a quality compass. And decisions regarding future changes really should be based on some on your run chart data. And basically, I'm just going to skip to the conclusion slide to leave a little bit of time for questions and answers. Monthly senior leader reports help organize your team's approach and summarize what works. Sharing senior leader reports assists other hospitals in their rapid cycle work by providing new ideas for them. Run charts give a quick data-driven summary at a glance and form the kernel of a good senior leader report. And finally, we hope that some of the templates that we've tried to make available to you will permit you to easily format your senior leader reports and your run charts. And I do want to point out that the Excel template is something that you can kind of drag and drop. You can drag that goal line, that dotted line, anywhere you want. You can change the data points depending on what numbers you put in. You can drag and drop the text boxes and the arrows. Well, I hope that was helpful for sort of a start in terms of getting a sense of an overview of our philosophy of Jenny, as well as some of the practical aspects for how to do communicating and do this through senior leader reports. And I think, operator, now we could be ready to take some questions, if there are any, from the audience.
All right, thank you. To ask a question or have a comment, please press the 1 followed by a 4 on your touch-tone phone. If for any reason you need to retract a question, it is a 1 followed by a 3. Once again, for questions or comments, please press the 1 followed by a 4. Sir, it appears there's no questions at this time.
Okay, well, very good. I want to thank everyone for their attendance and encourage, do we have an evaluation form?
Yes.
We have, I think Denise will talk a little bit about that, and we really encourage you to send that in so that we know whether or not we addressed issues that you thought were important, and whether there's anything else you would have wanted from this this presentation. I also, Denise reminded me to point out that the Excel template allows you to plot the data points because it has an area in it that you can put the number of the percentage in, and it will automatically then plot the data point on the graph. It's actually really not rocket science in a way. I mean, for those of you that have some experience with Excel, I think you'd, you know, have no trouble modifying the template so that it suits your purpose. And I'm going to just turn the call over to Denise to close.
And thank you again, Dr. Stimler, for that informative presentation. And pursuant to what Dr. Stimler just mentioned, there are senior leader run charts posted onto Jenny by the clinical topic forums. There is a password required for it, and you can contact any one of the team members, or you could just contact me directly since I'm in on this call. My extension is 676, IPRO's telephone number 516-326-7767. Contact me and I will be happy to provide you with the password to access the run charts. And again, as Dr. Stimler mentioned, there are tables embedded that all you have to do is plot the denominator and your numerator, and it automatically calculates the rate in addition to plotting that rate point onto the run chart. Before we conclude, just a few more housekeeping items. As Dr. Stimler mentioned, also the evaluation form, we respectfully request that you take a moment to fill it out, as it does provide us with useful feedback for future collaboratives. And we'd also like to remind you of our next conference call, which is coming up on December 8th, and the topic of that call will be teamwork. And during that call, we're going to be discussing the role of some of the other departments with regards to quality improvement efforts. And the two areas that we'll be discussing is pharmacy and social work. And that call is from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., and it'll be the same call-in number, and we will continue to bring you updated information on that call. Again, thank you for joining us. We'll also remind you to please post any questions or feedback that you may have on the Jenny website. This, I hope, is an exciting point during this collaborative for our participants out there, as you are now beginning to, again, implement your system changes and be able to assess how they are working. Again, thank you very much, and everybody, please have a great day.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference call, and thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.